The Daily Tech News Show with Tom Merritt is powered by Patreons like you. From 5 cents to $50, every contribution helps Tom and company produce fresh episodes of Essential Tech News. To learn more and support the show, visit patreon.com/acedetect. And thanks for listening.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, September 19th, 2014. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today, Eck from Hockey Buzz. Eklund's here with his brand new iPhone 6s. I think he's got one, but his wife got one as well. Interesting story to go along with that we'll talk about later, eh?
Oh, yeah.
That's gonna be fun.
I'm in a lot of trouble, put it that way.
Oh, that doesn't sound good. Also joining us, Len Peralta here to illustrate the episode. Len, you didn't get an iPhone 6, did you?
I did not get an iPhone 6. I don't know. I still like the 5, and I'm not ready to get that large of a phone just
yet. I haven't got one either, but Patrick Beja did, and we've invited him to pop in later on, so hopefully he'll jump in and give us the French perspective on the iPhone 6. But let's start with some headlines. With Apple getting some good response to their privacy subsite yesterday, it shouldn't be a big surprise that Google would want some attention too. Google spokeswoman Nikki Kristoff told the Washington Post that not only has Google offered on-device encryption for more than 3 years, but starting with the next Android release, encryption will be enabled by default on Android devices. Meanwhile, BlackBerry stands in the corner, arms crossed, pointing at itself, going, hey, we've been doing this forever.
But doing so politely because it is Canadian after all.
Right. They're going, hey, we've been doing this forever. But please,
when
it's
you're
okay.
Around to-
Sorry. ThreatPost mentions Google Dropbox and others are supporting a new project called Simply Secure to improve the usability of open source privacy tools. The organization's advisors will include Cory Doctorow, Ian Goldberg, and Google's Ben Laurie. The idea is to bring open source developers together with usability experts to solve problems and make apps easier to use. This is a lot. There's a lot of efforts like this going on, but this is interesting to say, hey, let's get some UX guys in here, because that's the one thing that open source folks often just don't have time for. It's not that they're bad at it. It's just that they're pressed for time. I think this is great.
I think it's great too. I don't know if it's time so much as they just don't care about it. The people I know with open source, they just want the simplest interface there is possible. So
yeah. And I think that's what I'm trying to say is they're like, look, this does what I need to do. I've got code to crunch. I'm not going to spend any more time on it. Exactly. And there's guys that will spend the time on it. It's great. Bloomberg reports that Chinese e-commerce site Alibaba had a successful debut on the New York Stock Exchange today, raising $21.8 billion in its initial public offering. The IPO was priced at $68, but closed for the day at $93.89 per share. Company is now valued at $231 billion, which makes it worth more than Amazon.com and eBay, and more valuable than all but 9 companies in the S&P 500.
Scares the heck out of me to order from it, though. Have you ever gone to it and tried to order anything from it? It's just, I don't know why. It's amazing to me the amount of people that have faith in it. It looks shady. It's just the way it acts. But yet it's doing unbelievably well.
Yeah, they are not positioned for the U.S. market or the North American market even. But in the Chinese market, man, they have it locked up. Well, I shouldn't say they have it locked up. They're in some stiff competition with Tencent, but they are a powerhouse. And they are, you know, people describe them differently depending on who you're asking. Some people say, oh, they're the eBay of China. Oh, they're the Amazon of China. Now they're starting to become the everything of China. So it is really interesting to see them on the New York Stock Exchange, too. And an IPO that went up, not one that went down from the initial public offering.
Amazing.
Ars Technica reports that Apple released iCloud Drive yesterday as part of the iOS update, but OS X Mavericks does not support the new Apple Cloud platform, which means Mac users should wait until OS X Yosemite is released later this fall before activating it, especially if they've got apps that sync across these platforms. However, Apple did release an updated version of iCloud for Windows, which has full support for iCloud Drive, which means Windows users with iPhones have the advantage over the Apple users who didn't opt into the Yosemite beta. Of course, iCloud for Windows still can't use iCloud Keychain to sync passwords or use the Find My Device app, so don't get too excited. But yeah, that's kind of an interesting juxtaposition there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome for the many Windows people that I know, will they be too good for this? You know, will they be like, oh, you know, we're not going to listen to that. I'm going to take that.
Yeah. Linux users, you can stop your whining. Or any of the other workarounds you've been using to make Netflix work on your Linux machine, like Wine being the emulator. The Mucked passes along that Netflix software engineer Paul Adolf remarked on the Ubuntu developer mailing list that Netflix would be able to play video in Chrome on Ubuntu if NSS version 3.16.2 or greater is installed, to which Ubuntu security engineer Mark Delorier responded he plans to update Ubuntu with those very libraries, and he might look at it as early as next week. So finally, Netflix coming to Linux, native. No workaround necessary. How many people do you think are going to be sad because they're like, but I have a really good workaround?
Oh, yeah, I got the. I can watch it on every TV at the same time and my neighbor's TV, too. So, yeah.
Yeah. Ars Technica reports that a developer called Vladikov has taken Google's app runtime for Chrome, which originally allowed certain Android apps, I think it was about four apps, to run in Chrome OS, and not only made it run all Android apps, but made it work in the Chrome browser as well. Vladikov's custom version called Archon, A-R-C-H-O-N, can be sideloaded into Chrome 37, and then he gives you something called Chrome OS-APK, which can convert Android APKs into Chrome extensions, and voila, you have Android apps running on Windows, OS 10, or Linux, just running in the Chrome browser.
That's the best thing that's happened to Windows in a while. That'll be good.
Yeah. I mean, you could do BlueStacks or something like that previously, but this is pretty nifty. Good job, Vladikov. Time for some news from you. These are things submitted on our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We get all kinds of stuff, several things that were in the headlines already today were on that subreddit, but we like to call out a few of them that get some interesting votes that maybe not as buzzworthy in other places you look on the internet. Captain Kipter posted the Ars Technica story that MPHJ Technologies has lost its lawsuit against the US FTC. MPHJ was sending small business letters requesting $1,000 per worker for using scan to email functions. If you had a freaking copy machine, essentially, you were getting these letters. That caused attorneys general in Vermont and Nebraska to sue MPHG. So MPHG decided to sue the FTC, which said it was threatening to violate its right to free speech because the FTC was going to investigate it. That speech, I guess, would be the ability to threaten small businesses. However, on Tuesday, U.S. District Court Judge Walter Smith dismissed the case since the FCC hadn't actually done anything. MPHJ is still fighting the attorneys general. It's doing actually well in Nebraska, but not so hot in Vermont. TM204 passes along the news that the U.S. Senate is considering limits on U.S. law enforcement access to emails stored abroad. We'll see if this is good news for Microsoft. Network World reports that the bill would allow the use of search warrants outside the U.S. only in relation to U.S. citizens or companies. The bill would also allow courts the power to modify or deny the warrant request if it forces a company to violate the laws of a foreign country. Whether or not this would help Microsoft in its quarrel with the federal government about access to emails stored in Dublin is not clear.
It's interesting how we have this, you know, worldwide web and these local laws, and we run into situations, especially in this kind of case. Yeah, I'm glad Microsoft is sticking to its guns.
Yeah, this is an interesting rule that says yes, you can go after U.S. citizens abroad, because that's still a problem for some situations. But what the NSA and others tend to want to do is go after non-U.S. citizens and only catch U.S. citizens in the pursuit of those non-U.S. citizens. That's what they're usually authorized to do. Right. So this would stop them from being able to do that unless they get a warrant in the countries in which those emails are stored. Metal Freak pointed out an eSecurityPlanet.com post indicating a Swiss website called CipherShed.org claims to be the home of a project taking the TrueCrypt code forward and turning it into a new application. Josh Dokerbeiter, the initiator of the project, said CipherShed will be released under an open source license, but which one has not been decided yet. The intent is to make a faster, more secure product that can work under newer operating systems like Windows 8, but still be backwards compatible and open older TrueCrypt containers. So hope for the TrueCrypt future. And Captain Kipper has news from The Verge that should help some very concerned people on Twitter to worry less about my photos. I was using Tweetbot on my recent trip to post a few pics, and the version of Tweetbot that I use happens to use TwitPic to upload pics, and a bunch of people were warning me I was flirting with disaster and should stop immediately because TwitPic had announced it was shutting down, and how dare you use TwitPic to still post a picture? Good news, everyone! TwitPic posted on Twitter today that it has been acquired and will live on. Crisis averted.
And yet many people are already, you know, buying apps that make their pictures go away immediately. So you could have been happy about this.
Yeah, maybe I was doing it intentionally. It's like an extended Snapchat. Now I'm upset. Oh, you mean they're going to stick around? Crap. I was hoping they'd go out of business. And that's a look at the headlines. I know I've been telling you about this all week, but for anybody who missed it or hasn't checked it out yet, I wrote a novella called Events of a Different Nature. Len Peralta illustrated the cover, so it's worth checking out for that alone, even if you don't care about the story.
That's a great recommendation, Tom.
Yeah, judge this book by its cover, will you? TomAirBooks.com. It's about crime and private investigators and special agents. I was just looking at a passage that takes place in Switzerland where Greta passes out from her injuries and Django has to drag Greta out of the cottage into the cold air to revive her. I mean, it's full of that kind of adventure. So there's a free
action
version.
Action-packed, Pee-wee.
That's right. There's a free version as a PDF as well as versions for all the ebook platforms and a print version at TomAirBooks.com.
Kind of an 80s feel to it, Tom, like the cover especially. Cover's got, like, to me it has like an 80s feel, like you'd expect, you know, the theme to Footloose playing in the background somehow with these dogs as they pursue people.
Best enjoyed with the soundtrack to Footloose playing in the background. Can I get you to blurb that? I'll throw that on the back of the
anytime.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right, well, it is iPhone 6 day, so those of you who don't care about the iPhone can probably tune out now. Eck, you pre-ordered one, which arrived, right? That was an iPhone 6 Plus?
Yes, the one I pre-ordered, which is this one, did indeed arrive in my home. I, you know, confronted the mailman. I had a drop cam set up to watch for him because couldn't actually sign it here because we had people working on the outside of the house and I didn't think it would last the day. So I had to stay there, but yep, it did arrive. I also went this morning because my wife said, I really want one too. And she's actually been the iPhone user the whole time. I haven't been on the iPhone since the 3GS. But I was on all of them before that, the day they came out. But I went this morning to Best Buy and tried to get her one, and the problem was that Best Buy had no 6 Pluses at all. And but they didn't tell us that until we got to the front, which was nice of them. So spent about an hour and a half outside and walked up. And what's really interesting, I thought, just hearing the stories of, well, you know, Target has more of them, and this place has more, and there's this whole network that's going on. It's hilarious. People are just moving and grooving on it.
Yeah, I stopped by the local Best Buy over here on Pico Boulevard and counted. There were 21 people in line at about 11:15 a.m. So I imagine it had been longer. And as I was walking through, I heard one guy go, "Why is this line not moving?" But I went there because I saw you posted that you were at Best Buy, and I thought, well, I should go check out the Best Buy because it's not that far. I can just jump over there real quick. Patrick Beja has also joined us here as well. Patrick, did yours arrive by post? Oh, I can't hear you, Patrick. I don't know. You seem to be muted somehow. But I assume that your iPhone did arrive by post, but I don't know. Maybe you went to the store to get it. I still can't hear you, though. Can you hear him, Mac?
I can't hear him.
We can make up
there
a voice
go.
For
him.
We'll, well, we nope. can hear Len. Patrick, just yell and scream once you...
Perhaps you could mime your experience.
Once you've checked your settings and seen if your audio works. But Eck, while we figure out Patrick, you said, and we alluded this at the top of the show, that setting up your iPhone messed up your wife's phone. How did that work?
Right. Well, here's the thing. I ordered after I ran out of the options there, I said, okay, I'll order you one on the Apple Store. So I ordered her one with her phone number. And the one that came somehow, and I do not know how, I guess was on her phone number. I took my SIM out of another thing because I took my SIM out of my Nokia phone and I just put it in here figuring that would be fine. But there's something that's not fine about that because what happened immediately, I realized I was getting all of her text messages and my text messages. So then I thought, okay, maybe we're linked somehow in iMessage, right? So I turned off iMessage, and so then I wasn't getting her text anymore. But then I called her and went right through voicemail, and I'm like, I'm screwed. My wife's phone never goes right to voicemail. And she's a wonderful lady indeed, but she's not happy when she doesn't have her phone functioning properly. So, panic ensued, and then for a while, you know the whole thing about I hate technology, and then why do you get these new things, right? And yeah, it was a pleasant experience. And still, to this point, we haven't, until she gets home, when I'm going to take the SIM that was in my phone when they sent it to me and try to put it in her phone and see if that fixes it, which might. I don't have any other ideas. I mean,
so
right
wait,
now,
you took the SIM out of whose phone?
I took a SIM out of my Lumia that I was using.
Okay. So and theoretically.
I cut it down. I have a SIM cutter and everything. I cut it down.
And you bought an unlocked iPhone?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Yes.
I bought it completely outright. Right? So I thought that would be fine. And putting the SIM in there, I thought would be no problem. And I did get the little message as I was going through, you know, your link to iMessage. Are you okay with these people FaceTiming you? And her number came up. And I'm like, okay, sure. But somehow I can't do iMessage. It's both of our. So she was getting my text. I was getting her text. Neither of us could text each other. And then her phone just stopped working altogether.
I imagine that somebody out there in the telecom industry is like, oh, I know what happened. And they could email us and explain it. But yes, that's the way it's supposed to work, right? If you've got an unlocked phone, and I assume the Lumia was unlocked as well, right?
Lumia was unlocked as well. Yep. And so I just went from one to the other. I mean, a different size SIMs, but I cut the SIM, you know, and I have like a special SIM cutter that I, from back in when, I think I learned from maybe Ayaz taught me how to cut a SIM way back then. And so I was all set, you know, so I went from, you know, this Lumia basically to this iPhone. And but that gives you a perspective of the size too, because the Lumia is not a small phone.
Patrick Beja is now audible.
It's only to yell, so I did.
So a little bit of a setup snafu for Eck, but at least his 6 Plus is working. How did your acquisition of an iPhone go?
The acquisition went super well. I was expecting to wait until late in the evening to get my phone. And of course, the guy arrived at 9 in the morning, so I have been playing with it for about, I don't know, 10 hours now, 11 hours. So yeah, it went super well. And I decided to do the daring thing of not porting over my old saves and just start from scratch. So it has been a 10-hour journey. But I have to say my first impression, I don't know how much you've talked about this specifically, but it really does feel kind of big. And I got the 6, not the 6 Plus. I've always resisted getting bigger phones on, or at least, you know, getting Androids that people were telling me were cool, but even though I thought they were big. And bear in mind, there are going to be a lot of that's what she said jokes opportunities in this. So I'm just going to acknowledge it now and just not mention it again. And I always felt they were too big. And here, unfortunately, it feels like that too. I was kind of hoping that I would see the revelation, and it might still happen. It's only been 10 hours, and everyone's telling me after 2 weeks you won't want to go back to the smaller one, which I believe, but I didn't expect it to feel as big as it is. And there's also so many apps on the home screen. Bear in mind, I'm coming from a 4S, and I did use occasionally a 5, but it feels a little bit crammed, packed. So I guess that these are the two somewhat negative things.
Yeah,
I don't know if you want to go into them.
Yeah. I want you guys to compare your various first impressions. Nick sent us an email, and he mentioned size in particular, saying that he felt that the size was great even for one-handed use, but he points out it's a personal thing. It depends on who you are. And I think Android users can attest to that. They've been dealing with multiple sizes from the Note on down for a long time. It just depends on what you're used to and what you get used to and what you want to use it for.
Yeah. Well, it definitely, I have really big hands. And so this is the 4S for those who can see the video.
My Here gosh. Is In your my hands. Hand it looks like a chiclet.
Exactly. And even then, it's impossible for me to use the 6 one-handed.
He's not bragging, folks. He really does have large hands.
And you know what that means. I guess these are the somewhat negative things. The cool things, I'll gloss over the 4G, which I didn't have before, which is, it's cool. The 240 image per second slow-mo is surprisingly cool. I don't know if you've tried it yet.
I haven't tried it yet. No, I'm looking forward to it. We have a soccer game this weekend, and I want to try it with my kids, definitely.
Catch the exact right moment.
Yeah.
120 was fun. This has a kind of a little bit of a wow effect. So I can imagine we're going to see a little bit more cool things happening with that. But the things that really, I put in my notes, delighted me. The things that were actually delightful really have not much to do with the 6. It's all about Siri voice recognition. It's not really Siri, but the dictation really works now. It's been a very long time coming, but now it actually really works. It's as good, if not better, than Google's. It's instantaneous. So that's really I already used it from time to time, and now I think I'm going to be using it a lot. The Touch ID is also delightful. Again, I'm coming from the 4S, so I haven't been using it with the 5, but a lot of the 5S, but a lot of people have been telling me that it worked maybe 80% of the time at the beginning, which was good, but not, you know, really good. And here it works 97.5% of the time. It just works. You don't think about it. And the last thing that still has nothing to do with the 6, I guess, is SwiftKey, which it's the one thing that Android users have been telling me, you know, custom keyboards are really cool. And I was sort of not dismissing it, but thinking,
man. I love SwiftKey on my Nexus 7. And I was so excited to finally get it on a freaking iPhone.
And this is the thing that I would say everyone who has iOS 8, just install it right now. It is the best feature about iOS, and of course Android users have been using it for a long time. But overall, I like the 6. It's just that all of the features that I really like don't really have much to do with the phone itself. It's a good upgrade, but it's an iPhone. It's not anything surprising.
I know you started from scratch. Nick in his email to us said the one thing he feels is that it's faster than his 5S, but he wishes it had allowed him to transfer over his Touch ID settings and his health settings. He understands that that's because of privacy, that they don't do that. Eck, how was your setup? Did you go from scratch or did you move things over?
Yeah, I started from scratch too. I mean, most of my iOS experiences have been iPads since the 3GS, you know, so I didn't really want, my iPad's a totally different setup for me, you know, different apps and stuff like that. So to me, I thought I would start from scratch. I agree with you with SwiftKey, though. That's fantastic. And I also agree with Patrick on the voice recognition. I've been playing around with, you know, between the Galaxy S5 and Nokia has a really good voice recognition as well on the Windows phones. But this one is exceptional. The voice recognition is definitely, and it's exceptional in the way that it actually listens to you and then figures out what you're saying and goes back and corrects things as you're going along, which is really kind of fun to watch. You know, it'll change there to there, they are to there. It's making little corrections, which they all do, but this does it extremely fast. And that's a really nice feature. It is big. I mean, it's definitely big. I made the choice on going with a bigger phone because of what I do in the press, and I thought I could maybe get away with just bringing this to cover games, you know, when I'm covering hockey games. I've been usually bringing a phone and an iPad, and I thought maybe I could just get away with this. And I think I will probably be able to do that, which I kind of like. So, but I don't know that I would recommend it for everybody. I think it's a little too big. I definitely, looking at both of them, I agreed with what Molly Wood said yesterday, actually, which is that the one felt too big and the one felt too small. It really did feel that way to me.
The 6 feels too small to you?
Maybe just because I'm coming from a Lumia or, you know, a bigger phone, and it felt, when I was holding both of them in the store, the 6 felt like the 5, my wife's 5. It felt like that. It didn't feel any bigger at all. And maybe I was just expecting it to be bigger.
Well, that's what Nick was saying. It's all a personal thing. It's from what your expectations have been. And I think you guys are examples of it coming at it from an iPhone 4S user, I guess. And a bigger phone user, like a non-iPhone large phone user, it's just going to feel different.
It feels like the Note 2. It reminds me of the Note 2 the most of any phone I've had. That definitely, it does have that feeling of the Note 2, except it's way smoother and the screen is way better. But that besides that, you know, it has that feel that I originally got with the Note 2. And I'm kind of used to the flip-flop thing like the Samsungs have. They all come with these covers now that go on top of them. I got used to that too, and it feels like the phone this size, you should have something like that on it, or else it does feel like you could flip pancakes with it really easily because it's so thin.
I did a teardown, and that thing is mostly battery if you watch the teardown. Aside from discovering it had a gig of RAM, their big discovery was it's a 2,915 milliamp hour battery in the Plus. Patrick, you've been using it for more than 12 hours now. How's the battery life?
Well, it's always difficult to judge because I've actually been using it for almost all of those 10 hours, like fixing stuff and installing stuff and getting apps signed back in and all of that. It did definitely burn through the battery with actual active use for multiple hours. I came from a 4S, which is 3 years old now, maybe a little bit more, and I had to charge that my 4S midway through the day. And so even though I wasn't using it a lot, but this one, when I was using it a lot, it was sort of the same scenario, but it's really not fair because it of course the battery is going to burn down. Now I haven't been using it so much in the past couple of hours and it's going okay, but it, let's put it like that. It's not the miraculous battery that I was kind of half hoping for. It's still a phone and I guess it's going to last you the day, well into the night probably, but it's not a significant improvement for battery life.
You got to have a bigger battery to power that bigger screen. Jack Cooksey was the first person to get an iPhone 6. He didn't get a 6 Plus. He got a 6 at Perth, Australia. And then when he was talking to the TV reporter right outside the store, as he opened the box, it fell out and dropped on the ground, which has become a hit video now across the internet.
Did it break?
No, apparently it was fine. At least that's what everybody said, although I didn't see it actually turn on in the video, so I don't know. Daryl Etherington was saying that the lines seem longer than they have been the last couple iPhones. Why do you all think this iPhone, which really is just a bigger screen, and there's Apple Pay coming, obviously.
Not for us.
Not in all regions. Why do you think this one is exciting people more?
I think it might be I think the watch may have something to do with it, honestly, even though it's a ways off. I mean, people who don't have an iPhone, that was my decision. That was why I went back to it, just because I did want to try the watch, and I couldn't otherwise. And so I thought, why not try it? I think that sort of is helping. I also think that, you know, the big phone thing, Apple in their typical style, let somebody else do the big phone thing first, and now they've come in, you know, and so it's not so obnoxious as it would have been if they had done it before. One of the weird things about setting up, though, I forgot about this, on the bigger phone, I don't know if yours did this or not, Patrick, but you get you get to make a decision at one point whether you want the icons to be bigger or smaller. Yeah. There's this screen where you get, you know, you can zoom it in or zoom them out. And I just wonder why not have more. I guess you just can't. I guess it doesn't scale properly. But just, I'd rather have more icons smaller than just bigger or smaller icons.
Oh, see, I wouldn't. There are too many on that screen already. And I understand it's the same as the iPhone 5, I suppose. Let me check. But it feels already like there's too many of them. Getting back to the question about the excitement for, oh no, I'm sorry, there's one extra row compared to the iPhone 5. That's why it feels like there's so many of them. But about the excitement, I think I have a different explanation from you. I don't think the watch has a lot to do with it. People are still a little bit uncertain about that, with reason. But I think a lot of people, when the iPhones first came out, were buying one almost every year. It was basically renewing your phone because it's like old PCs. You had to get the new one because you were just running more powerful stuff on it. And then the iPhone 4 and 4S came out, and people started going, all right, you know what? Maybe I don't need a phone right now. Maybe I don't need to buy the latest one immediately. And they saw the 5. It was cool, but it was an elongated 4. And then the 5S, a lot of people were like, yeah, it's the same as the 5. I'll just wait for the real next new one. So I think there's a significant amount of people who stop at the 4S or even the 4 and who are like, all right, now, you know, I really like the iPhone. I like the ecosystem. I'm not really interested by Android. Now it's a phone that actually has enough to convince me to buy it. And that's why you have a little bit more excitement surrounding this phone, when really, when you look at the 5S, it doesn't have a huge amount of extra features. That's the way I explain it, at least. I don't know if it's valid, but that's how I see it.
I think that's probably fair. I think that's a probably good analysis of it. How long are we... As I was sitting in line, and I sat in line for the first iPhone and a couple others and a couple of iPads and things like that, I thought to myself, how long are we going to be doing this? Like, how long is this going to be something that we do? And you know, I mean, will we tell our kids, yeah, there was like a decade there or so when we, you know, we always sat in line for the latest phone. And that, would that be the equivalent of us telling them, like, you know, of our parents saying, yeah, we got a rotary phone every year because they were new and great. I just wonder, you know, what time a phone just becomes a phone, you know, and they're doing a great job at not letting that happen, I have to admit. But at some point, as I was sitting this, I'm like, it feels like this is something that my kids will laugh about that we did this. I don't know why.
I would have thought this was the time it fizzled out, but I think the screen size did it. And Patrick, I think you may be onto it, where we could look at it and go, okay, I've been waiting for something new to happen with the iPhone since maybe the 4, even in some cases, and now it's new, it's bigger, and maybe this is the last great hurrah. I don't know.
I don't know. You know, I think about the excitement, I think it might have something to do with our generation, with the kids not being so interested because they were, when I say the kids, you know, the iPhone, the new smartphones came about 8 years ago. So kids that were, let's say, 10 or so have grown up with it and they don't really care. But for us, there is still this residual excitement of how incredible this new thing was, this really revolutionary device. And if you tack on the Steve Jobs reality distortion field, I think it's still in us. You know, we sort of still want to relive this excitement of having these smartphones that were clunky and annoying and that didn't really fulfill the promises that were made to us. And shifting to that vision of a future that we were hoping for. So I think there might be a little bit of that still in us. We might keep doing it. I don't really do it all that much, but we might still do it for a long time for us. The younger people don't really care, I suppose.
Well, I think that's true because my daughter's 13 and you know, I got her a 5C last year and she just came home one day and, Dad, would you mind getting me an iPhone 5C at some point? I'd like that. You know, it wasn't like, it was just like, it was like picking up toilet paper. You know, I was like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll go get you the iPhone 5C at some point. You know, it was really like completely, I mean, and I think you're right because there was that initial, like the first, when you first got the first iPhone and you came back with we all had that feeling of like, wow, I'm holding something here that is totally going to stay in my hands for the next 10 years. I'm not going to let go of this thing. I'm going to have it around me. And before that, because that was the other thing I was thinking about today in line, I couldn't help but laugh because everybody there is looking at their iPhones or iPads. And I what did we do when we waited in line for the first iPhone? I thought, you know, like, what did we do then? Because now we can do this now. And it was just kind of fascinating to me to think about that. I think you're right. I think there's still this awe. We just really want to be awed. We just want that whole thing of like to be blown away.
I think there's a certain amount of people want to recapture that feeling of that first iPhone. And so they keep going back. You're right. That is part of the momentum that happens here.
And it does to an extent. You know, there is something to, I know a lot of people joke about, oh, look at those losers going in line for 8 hours to buy a phone. It's not about buying the phone. Well, maybe it is a little bit about buying the phone, but it's really about the feeling of communion and community and being with people. And for all the talk about how the internet separates us, and a lot of people who don't use the internet say that, I think for people like us, it brings us really closer together and brings us closer to people that we would never have been close to. Case in point, you know, this show and its community. And when you go to a thing like that, it's a way of having, you know, community contact, and it's about the experience more than it is about getting the phone. So that also plays a role, I think.
Case in point, when I waited out in line for the iPad, I met this woman and her son, and I waited a long time for the iPad. I was out in line, and we talked forever. I never would have met these people ever in any other situation. 3 years later, I was walking through the mall, and I came across them. And it was as if, you know, I spent this 3 intense hours with them at one point. I know these people so well, but I have no idea. And it took me forever until I got home later that night to say, wait a second, that's the iPad people. You know, but you're right. You make these connections and you end up seeing all these people who work at home. You know, a lot of people who are in line today were people who work at home.
It's a celebratory feel that happens among the people who are willing to do that. And that's part of it, too. Well, Patrick, thanks for jumping in and chatting with us. If you need to hop out whenever you want.
I was just jumping in for a second. Thank you so much for having me for this little tirade about the iPhone. And have a good rest of the show.
No, it's fantastic. Thanks, man. Appreciate you sharing your insights with us.
No problem. Talk to you soon. Bye, guys.
Talk to you soon. Taking a look at the calendar, September 20th through the 21st is Maker Faire in Corona, New York, otherwise known as Queens. September 20th through the 21st is also DroidCon New York, in which all things Android will be discussed. And September 21st through the 22nd is the Health 2.0 conference about healthcare technology. I'm sure HealthKit will be discussed at least in the hallways at that. Our pick of the day is mine today, and given the earlier story about security, I'm going to pick SpiderOak. Now, I use Dropbox, and Dropbox is very convenient, and they just up their storage amount, you know, so that's great, but I don't really want to use Dropbox for secure things. If I have something I want to lock down, not going to be my pick. SpiderOak has a privacy policy that I can hang on to. It's got good encryption. It's 2 gigabytes free for life, $10 a month for 100 gigabytes. But really, the thing you want to look at is their zero knowledge privacy promise. They don't want to know anything about your files, and they're interested in you keeping them private. So you might want to check them out if you want to share files and you have some sensitivity about whether the company you're storing them with are going to look at them. SpiderOak.com. You can send your picks to feedback at DailyTechNewsShow.com, and you can find my picks at DailyTechNewsShow.com/picks. All right, Eck, you ready for our message of the day?
Absolutely.
This one comes from Brendan, who has thoughts about Apple Pay.
Hey, Tom, Jenny, and guest. At the end of show 2325, you brought up Apple Pay and where it could be accepted. I've been thinking about this as I run a small business. I currently use Square and would love to accept Apple Pay from my clients. I've wondered if Square would release a new dongle with NFC built in, but maybe they could just update their app and use the chip inside the iDevice. Apple hasn't announced an API for third-party use of NFC, so maybe Apple will build their own point-of-sale app. I'm just being silly at this point and should wait for official announcements. This is Brendan from Portland, and thank you for the show.
Thanks, Brendan. That is some wishful thinking, right? The idea that Apple not only would open up NFC, which they might, but then let competing payment systems use it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're definitely going to build an app of their own, of course, and this is going to be controlled by them completely.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I'm not as excited about NFC in an iPhone as I might be, is uncertain what they're going to allow people to do with it. If they said, yeah, we're going to open it up to developers the way that we've opened up Touch ID, and PayPal can use it, Square can use it, all of these competing payment systems can use it if they want, that would be great. Apple doing Apple Pay makes me feel less like that's what's going to happen. It feels like Apple, when they do a service like this, they want to control it, you know, and they put in their terms, you can't put competitive apps in the store to apps that they already have. So I just don't see it.
It reminds me a little bit of the first iPhone where there were no apps, you know, and people kind of forget that there were no apps and they sort of wanted to control the whole thing. And yet eventually they realized that, hey, you know what, if we let people write their own apps, I think NFC could be that way. Down the line, they might realize it might be better for them. Right now, they're not going to do that.
All right, let's finish up with some Len Peralta art. Len, what have you been drawing?
Well, you know, I'm so glad that Eck talked a little bit about what will happen in the future when people will they stand in line for the iPhone. I personally have never stood in line for an iPhone, but I have a lot of respect for people who do. So this is my take on it. I think given the size of these iPhones, I think civilization will grow and evolve to meet the size of the next-gen iPhones. And what I have here on this cartoon is it says, status will be determined not by wealth, but by the giants who crush others who dare to stand in line. So you're
saying if I get the 6 instead of the 6 Plus, I'm limiting my growth opportunity personally.
Correct. You will not evolve in the future. So years from now, we will just have a race of large people who are going to buy the bigger and bigger iPad or iPhone, I should say.
It's like a goldfish theory.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Apple stores will become huge and I'll get lost in them unless I buy the 6 Plus. I've made a horrible mistake, Len.
Imagine haptic feedback on a phone that size.
So this print is available in my online store, and I also want to remind people that I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/Len, and it's if you like what I'm drawing here, you can watch me speed draw stuff, you know, and help me help support that little habit, the speed habit.
Yeah, the speed drawings are great. I'm really glad you're doing those.
Thank you. Thank you.
Patreon.com/Len. And to buy that print, or at least just get a look at it, LenPeraltaStore.com. HockeyBuzz.com is where you can find Eck most of the time. And, you know, you're in the off season, but there's still news kicking around. I see you posting some rumors this morning.
Oh, yeah. No, camps opened up this week. Yesterday and today, camps have opened up, and Blues are trying to sign Jaden Schwartz to a contract. And, yeah, there's a lot of things happening out there. So it's fun. I get to go to my first preseason game on Monday, and that's always fun to get out of the, you know, there's nothing like at the end of a long, hot summer going into a cold rink and realizing your fall has returned. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a good feeling, huh? HockeyBuzz.com. And, of course, follow you on Twitter at twitter.com/HockeyBuzz, right?
No, Eklund.
Oh, you're at I always want to put those the other way. Twitter.com/Eklund. It's E-K-L-U-N-D.
Correct.
Thanks, man. Good to have you on.
That's great to be here. I really appreciate it. And one thing I wanted to say about your calendar, people should go to the Maker Faire in New York. I've gone the last 3 years to that Queens Maker Faire, and it's awesome.
Excellent. Check it out if you're able to do so. And you can say X sent me. I don't know if it'll get you anything, but you can say it. Thanks to 4,284 patrons of this show that make it possible. You guys are why we are able to do what we do. We try to put as valuable a show out as we can every time. And if you see some value in it and you're able to give back, we really, really appreciate it. Patreon.com/AceDetect is one way to do it. There's also PayPal. There's also Bitcoin. There's even Dogecoin. You can find all the ways to support the show at DailyTechNewsShow.com/donate. Don't forget, you can have a voice in what stories we cover. That's one way to support the show. If you've got no other way to do it, just go to subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com, and do some voting. Email us, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. You can give us a call, 512-59-DAILY. That's 512-593-2459. And listen to the show live, mobile.alphageekradio.com. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. We'll be back Monday with Rob Kreckel as our guest. See you then.
Information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.